You're listening to The Sports Rabbi, hosted by Josh Halichman.
We're back here with the Sports Rabbi, Josh Halichman. Welcome to the Sports Rabbi Show, where we bring you the best of Israeli sports all the way up north in Aria, down south a lot, in all the great cities in between Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, and many, many more. And we have a great program for you today. Leading off the show, we have Israeli UFC MMA fighter Natan Levy joins the program. He was on the show actually last year, about 100 episodes ago. He joins the program. Do you know why? Because he is making finally his UFC debut. He is going to be fighting on Saturday night in Israel, 10 p.m. coming to you live from Las Vegas. Boy, oh boy, in a lightweight matchup. It's going to be super exciting. Natan Levy comes on board, talks about what he's been doing over the last number of months, how he's been preparing for the fight, and he lets us in on how much Israel means to him. Right after that, Dov Halichman comes on board the program, and we talk all about Israeli sports, Israeli basketball, Holy Land Hoops we bring him on for. And of course, we talk Maccabi Tel Aviv, double overtime win over Eilat, how that will affect the games coming up in the EuroLeague. We talk about the rest of the league as well. And finally, to wrap up the show, we have Roei Shelem talking about Israel football. Of course, we talk about the Israel national team campaign that just came to an end, and we talk about what the future lies, where things are going to be going for the blue and white. We have a great conversation. It's a great show. You'll enjoy all the guests, I am sure. Make sure that you subscribe to us, follow us on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you find your podcast. Make sure you leave us a 5-star rating. Remember to check me out at The Sports Rabbi, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, sportsrabbi.com in English and in Hebrew for the latest and greatest news in Israeli sports. Natan Levy, he is up. Listen and enjoy the program.
You're listening to The Sports Rabbi.
All right, we're back here with The Sports Rabbi, Josh Halichman. We have a very, very special guest with us. Wow, coming to us from Las Vegas, it is going to be Natan Levy. He is going to put on a show for everybody this coming weekend. He makes his UFC, official UFC debut, finally, almost a year later, after he had Shahid Satana submit to him at Dana White's Contender Series 35 back November 2020. He is making his debut in the Octagon. Is so huge. This is so massive. Natan Levy, Israel's, in my opinion, foremost MMA fighter today, is going into the Octagon. I'm sure you are going to be so proud to be carrying that Israeli flag. November 20th, he's going to be fighting Mexican Rafa Garcia at the UFC Apex in Las Vegas. Big lightweight matchup on the prelim card of the co-main event, which features Caetan Vieira, Misha Tate, as well as Michael Chiesa and Sean Brady. It's going to be on in Israel on all the sports channels, of course, Sport 5, starting at 10 p.m. Israel time. And, of course, if you're on the East Coast, it's probably going to be around 3 p.m. in the afternoon and around New York City. He'll be on soon after that, warm up. I know that's where I'll be on Saturday night at 10 o'clock on my couch, watching the prelims and looking forward to seeing Natan Levy. And we have Natan Levy for you right now. How are you today, Natan?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much. What an intro.
How excited are you? This is it, baby. We spoke last year. I did a huge feature piece about you, about how you finally made it. And here you are. You're finally going to make it big time UFC. How awesome does it feel, Natan?
It feels amazing. It really is big time. It's the time to show up and show the world, you know, what I've been working on so hard for so many years and put on the performance of a lifetime.
You know, how do you prepare for a fight like this? You've waited basically a year. You had an injury. You were supposed to fight Austin Hubbard back in April. I guess you were out with a little bit of an injury. So that fight was called off at the time. But you're finally going to make this debut. How do you prepare for such a fight?
You know, for me, it's not about preparing just for this fight. I'm lifelong martial artist and I always train hard. I'm not waiting to get a fight schedule to train. So it was heartbreaking to have this injury and to have had to pull out of a fight for the first time in my life. But on the other hand, the moment I could, I got back to training and back to getting prepared. Now I'm feeling healthy and I'm very comfortable with the decision that we have made to pull out of that last fight, because I was really in a bad place. I was hurting. Mm-hmm. But now I'm feeling so good. I'm feeling so strong. I've been training pretty much this whole year. Other than the injury, I was training for the Hubbard fight. I was training just to get better. I was training after the injury to rehab and to get better. And now for this fight. So it's not like a one-time camp thing where I gained 30 pounds between fights, 40 pounds, and then I got to get back in shape. No, I'm always in shape. I'm always ready to go. And this is the day the UFC gave me, and I'm going to show up ready.
Who is Rafa Garcia? Who is your opponent that people are going to be watching Saturday night from Las Vegas, UFC Apex? This is so cool. I cannot even hold in my excitement. Who is Rafa Garcia, for those who don't know him?
Rafa Garcia is a very tough and durable fighter. You know, he's Mexican. They have a big heritage of fighting over there. Mm-hmm. And of course, he's in the UFC, so he's an elite fighter. But on the other hand, for me, you know, he's the next victim. And on Saturday, I'm going to show the world that I can beat elite fighters in the UFC.
You know, Natan, when you prepare over the last few weeks, I think I know the answer here, but are you focusing on yourself, on how you're putting in your preparation, or you're preparing also a little bit to tailor your fight, your battle that you're going to put on for the specific opponent, and in this case, Rafa Garcia?
You know, I think every fighter does that individually. Some people really like to focus on the opponent. Some people rather not know anything about the opponent and just jump in there, you know, the best they can be. For me, it's kind of a mix. I do want to know what I'm up against. I think I have great coaching and great minds behind me. So why not use that to build a proper strategy to help me win? You know, techniques are great and I'm always sharpening up my technique, but I think strategy can beat technique a lot of times. So the right strategy can beat a better technique. Mm-hmm. And I feel I'm going to be faster. I'm going to be sharper. I'm going to be more hungry. But also I'm going to have a good game plan and a good strategy and the right coaching behind me to really, you know, secure that win.
Of course, Natan Levy, November 20th versus Mexican Rafa Garcia at the UFC Apex. We're all going to be watching here Saturday night starting at 10 o'clock on the Sports Channel. Natan, tell the people a little bit about you. Who is Natan Levy? We know you were born in Paris. I'm going to also put into this podcast, you'll be able to click the link to read the article, an interview we did last year, so people can get the full story about who Natan Levy is. Who is Natan Levy for the person that's listening to this for the first time?
I think I'm just a normal dude.
So
I love, I love, you know, I love martial arts, and I love challenging myself and getting out of the comfort zone. And when I have something in my mind, when I have a goal, I'm ruthless about it, and I go get it no matter what, no matter the hardship. And when I was doing karate as a youngster, that's what I did. I wanted to be the best, so I flew to Japan, and at age 16, you know, spent months there training, grueling training under Japanese masters and going through, you know, very hard training. And when I decided I was going to do MMA, it was the same thing. I wanted to be the best, and I flew and left everything all my life in Israel, left to go to Vegas and train with the best, you know, and that's how I am. I get a goal in mind and I pursue it. And for me, the goal has never been to reach the UFC. It's been to be a world champion. And of course, getting to the UFC is a huge part of it. Winning my debut is is the nearest goal. So for me, it's the biggest right now. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, the goal remains to be a world champion.
You know, you're going to be fighting on a card with Ketlin Vieira and Misha Tate. And off air, you just told me a great story about Misha Tate. I have to share it with the audience because I think it really speaks volumes about the camaraderie that is of the UFC fighter, of the MMA fighter. Share with the listeners a little bit about who Misha Tate is and why she is important in your career as well.
Yes, so when I got to Vegas the first time in 2013, I met a striking coach, Jimmy Giff, which trains me till this day. And he was working with Misha. And Misha at the time, you know, she was a pretty famous fighter, but she was not a world champion or anything. And she was climbing through the ranks. And I met her. She was very, very sweet and very nice to me. And she, of course, you know, she asked me, how is Israel? And do we have female fighters? Can female fight in Israel? Are they allowed? And of course, I explained to her that in Israel, it's a free country and women can do whatever they want and can achieve anything they want. But I told her the situation right now is there isn't even many male MMA fighters. So obviously even less female fighters. But I'm hopeful for the future. You know, we kept training with the same coach. I wouldn't see her very often, but, you know, from time to time. And when I had my first amateur fight, she was already world champion. And after I got my first win, basically, I left the cage and she was the first person to congratulate me, which was huge, you know, because I'm just a guy winning his first amateur fight and I have a world champion congratulating me outside the cage. It was you know, a great moment for me. And fast forward to today, she's the main event and I'm on the prelims. I'm on her UFC card. And it's amazing, you know, the full circle it went. And now things, you know, connect. My first UFC fight is with Misha on the same card. I think that's pretty cool.
I think that's super cool. And I think people are going to really be excited watching hours and hours of UFC fighting where they're going to see you. They're going to see Misha. They're going to see a ton of great action on Saturday, November 20th. We're looking forward to it. Before we let you go, Natan, as an Israeli, how important is that to you, your heritage, your homeland, walking into the octagon on Saturday, you know, bearing the Star of David?
It means the world to me. I'm very proud from, you know, where I'm from. I'm very proud of the country we have, the free country, you know, the only democracy in the Middle East, where, like I said, women can do whatever they want. Men can do whatever they want. Jewish, Christian, Muslims all have the same rights, exactly. And just, you know, that it's the one place where Jews can really be safe. Like even here in America, yes, you know, America are allies, but you have some people here, you have anti-Semitism. Of course, I feel safe, but some people may not feel safe in universities, in all kinds of places. Mm-hmm. I think Israel is our one and only home where we can really be safe and where we have the IDF to protect us. And I think that's an amazing thing. And I think we have to keep fighting for that.
Natan
and
Levy,
I will be fighting for that on Saturday.
I'm sure you will. Natan Levy, Saturday night, Israel time, 10 p.m. We're going to be watching on the Sports Channel from the UFC Apex in Las Vegas. Lightweight matchup. Natan Levy making his debut against Mexican Rafa Garcia. It's going to be a blast. We're so excited to have the chance and opportunity to watch you fight finally. And I'm sure you're even more excited to finally get into that ring. Natan Levy, an honor and a pleasure. Wishing you the best of luck on Saturday. We'll be following you. We're looking forward to speaking to you after the fight.
Thank you. Looking forward to.
You're listening to the Sports Rabbi.
All right. We're back with the Sports Rabbi, Josh Hoffman. Welcome aboard to the Sports Rabbi Show, Holy Land Hoops, where we bring you the best of Israeli basketball all the way up north to Nahariya, down south to Eilat, and all the great cities in between Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, Holon, and many, many more. Of course, we talk about Israeli basketball and what is going on, the latest news in, of course, the hoops around the Holy Land, the Holy Land Hoops. That's why we call it the name of the podcast. And if you like this podcast, make sure you leave us a 5-star rating. Make sure you subscribe, follow us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast. Make sure you put the Sports Rabbi right there up front and center. Make sure if you want to see the latest news and views in Israeli sports, both in English and Hebrew, go to sportsrabbi.com. And of course, you can reach out to me at the Sports Rabbi, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, sportsrabbi.com. We are here for you. And of course, as we do at our beginning / midweek podcast, we talk about Israeli basketball. We bring on none other than Dov Halachman as we talk about the latest in the Israeli league. And of course, we'll look to a double EuroLeague week with Maccabi Tel Aviv. How are you doing today, Dov Halachman? What's going on?
Doing great. Let's talk basketball.
Let's talk basketball. Maccabi Tel Aviv, they have a couple of EuroLeague games coming up Wednesday night. They are playing Monaco and Mike James as he comes back to Yad Eliyahu here in Tel Aviv, Israel. And on Friday, they go abroad to Piraeus, Athens, Greece, where they face Olympiakos, who have been playing extremely well. But before we get to that, Maccabi Tel Aviv had an interesting game, to say the least, on Sunday night. They played Hapoel Eilat, and they thought, I guess, it was going to be a walkover game. They dressed Scotty Wilbekin. A little did they know that Scotty Wilbekin was going to have to play, Dov, 44 minutes in the game. Little did they know that the game was going to go to double overtime for 50 minutes. Little did they know that they were going to see tons of their EuroLeague starters playing 35-plus minutes in the game. Not exactly what the doctor ordered ahead of a double EuroLeague week. That is for sure. Scotty Wilbekin coming off of a slight ankle injury has to play 44 minutes, which is just ridiculous. Jalen Reynolds with all kinds of minutes as well. It was just, I don't know exactly what happened over there, but what really happened was Brian Allen went off. And Brian Allen with 38 points was just absolutely spectacular for Hapoel Eilat. But it wasn't just that. Maccabi Tel Aviv did not put in their best performance. Again, you have players, just listen to these numbers here, ahead of a double week here. 44 minutes, Wilbekin, Cam Taylor, 28 minutes, Jalen Reynolds, 35 minutes, Roman Sorkin, 34 minutes, James Nunnally, 38. Now, you took that aside, and then you drop all the way down to the Israelis. Well, we'll say Ante Zich played 15 minutes, which probably he was on some kind of minutes limitation there. Now we have the Israeli players. John DiBartolomeo, 16 minutes, no points. Oz Blazer, 13 minutes, 9 points. A bunch of those coming at the overtime. Jake Cohen, 13 minutes, 5 points, minus 4 efficiency, minus 10 plus minus. And then, of course, Iftach Ziv was also a minus 3 plus minus, 5 points in 14 minutes. Now, I outlined in an article that I put out between a rock and a hard place that Yanis Varopoulos has to start trusting his Israeli players to play in these Israeli games. While this is going on, Dov, do you know what was going on in France with Monaco? Do you have any idea what went on in that game?
What went on in that game?
They played Soleil. They beat them at about 40 points, okay? They did not dress. Forget about did not play. They did not dress Mike James, Dwayne Bacon, Donatos Montiniunas, I believe Will Thomas as well, maybe Dante Hell also. A lot of their players, the bottom line, are going to be playing in the EuroLeague this week, double week. Now, who's going to walk into this game with an advantage and tired? And I'll say this, Yanis Varopoulos spoke about it a little bit in the press conference today, that the big worry here is that not so much that their confidence was shot, but the fatigue factor. Well, if you have your Israeli players playing 20-plus minutes in the Israeli league, which is what it should be, I mean, these are players that are solid players, right? John DiBartolomeo, who was an MVP of the Israeli league and has played EuroLeague for the last few years. Oz Blazer, who was in the second year with Maccabi and the EuroLeague. Jake Cohen, who's been in the EuroLeague for years and played in Spain last season. And Iftach Ziv, who is basically an MVP caliber player the last 2 years. These guys have to be playing more than 20 minutes. Now, I know Yanis Varopoulos' excuse is going to be, well, we didn't have a, Dov. What didn't we have this year? We didn't have a
break.
A preseason. We didn't have a preseason, okay. And I couldn't get the players playing properly. And I can't afford to lose games in the Israeli league because I already lost one game against Gilboa Galil. That was my throwaway game, right? You know, they go up to Gilboa, they kind of always lose there. They lost to Cologne in Cologne last week. So they certainly didn't want to lose yet another Israeli league game and go to 3-3 record. But listen, something has to give over here. I mean, we all know what's most important right now this time of year. It's the EuroLeague. Everybody agrees on that. Of course, the other side, Maccabi can't be 3-3. I mean, that would be bad in Israeli league. And then there's certain pressure coming there. How is Yannis Varopoulos going to get out of this conundrum, though?
He has a big problem. I mentioned earlier this week that Maccabi has basically had a double game week, because they also have a double game week EuroLeague-wise, and they also basically had a double game week in the league because of the double overtime, which took a massive toll on the team. I really don't know how Maccabi's going to get out of it. The one thing is for sure is the fact that they're playing at home this first game against Monaco, the fans will give them some kind of boost, but I really don't know if they can push through to actually play at their peak as well on Friday night, which is a prone-to-lose type of game, especially if Maccabi win.
Oh, I mean, that Friday night game already, if they win, it's like a gimme game, right? They won. You have to figure Maccabi has to finish 3-3 this month. You know, Yannis Varopoulos could say that, oh, I don't look at wins and losses, this, and that. But you look at Maccabi's schedule this month in November, they had to go 3-3, okay? Now, your three games that you're going to win, you would think, you know, if you look at the schedule before the season started, and even now once the season had started, Maccabi was 6-2, you figured they were going to lose to CSKA last week, but that was a game that they should have won. I'm not going to go into that already. I think we've beaten that horse already a number of times. But you got to figure they were had to win one of the following games, Baskonia, CSKA, Olympiakos on the road, because they're going to probably win in Alba next week, most probably. That's a game that they should win. And they should win against Monaco. So they had to find a way here to win, you know, three games. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So three out of five games they had to figure out how to win here. So the three games are going to basically be Baskonia, Monaco, and Berlin. And they're already throwing away the Olympiakos game. That's kind of what they're looking. You know, whatever may happen. We'll try our best. If we can win, we can win. If we can't win, we can't win, and we'll, you know, move on from there. At least that's the way I see it. Because then they have an Israeli league break. They have Rishon LeZion, which is, you know, with by far, not even arguably the worst team. They are the worst team in the Israeli league by a long shot, and they're playing them on Sunday night. So that, you know, I'm not going to say that's a gimme game, because everybody shows up against Maccabi. It doesn't matter. They're going to want to play well. Everybody knows that people are watching the game. But that's a game that Maccabi should easily roll over Rishon LeZion with or without Scotty Wilbeck. And I mean, it should not. I mean, every other team seems to be rolling over them. There shouldn't be any reason why they won't. Then they'll have a couple of weeks break with the national team in the middle. So they're going to give it their all, obviously, these next two games. That there's no question. And but he's kind of, you know, then there's a little bit of a break, which is good, but he's still has to find a way to get these Israeli players in. Maybe that Rishon LeZion game is just what the doctor ordered. Maybe letting a couple players go to the national team, if it's Jake Cohen and Yiftach Ziv, and maybe even Oz Blazer, maybe they give up three players and let them go. Maybe they even give up John and they let four players go. It's possible.
They could.
They could do that. I don't think they'll let John. I think they'll keep John because he's the captain. They need him there. You know, you never know when you need a good shooting guard off the bench, but I could definitely see them donating potentially even three players to the national team. I know that maybe, you know, Jay Cohn has been talking about as being the one, you know, lock for that. And of course, the amount of EuroLeague minutes he's played this year, one can, you know, you don't have to use a great imagination to figure that out. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out. But listen, I mean, Svaropoulos has to give these Israeli players time. Now, I guess he didn't realize that Brian Allen was going to give them fits. And Brian Allen gave them fits. 38 points. Marone Ruina had an excellent game, 12 points, 10 rebounds.
Allen was our co-MVP.
Yeah. Roy Huber, 11 points. Justin Patton, 14 points. I mean, I remember being Halachmi, and he said this is a cruel defeat, and then they had to bust back to a lot afterwards. It was brutal. I mean, if Cam Taylor's shot at the end of the first overtime doesn't bounce the right way, you know, they lose the game. So they got lucky. Maccabi Tel Aviv, any final thoughts on Maccabi? I'm not going to sit here and overanalyze Mike James. We're going to have out, of course, a whole article about Mike James and what some of the players and Coach Philippa spoke about them. Also in the game on Wednesday night, Maccabi Tel Aviv are going to be inducting two new members of the Maccabi Tel Aviv Hall of Fame in Oded Katash and Doron Sheffer, both well-deserving. And I guess it's a good time to put in Oded Katash because he's not coaching anywhere right now. So that's kind of a safe move. And it's nice that they're going in together, though.
Yeah, 100%. Regarding the last remarks on Maccabi, we'll really have to see what they can do tomorrow. And there, and from there, we'll be able to determine or guess what they'll do next. But it really is a big game for them tomorrow, and they really, really have to win because Friday is a real trouble, a big question mark over winning or losing that game. And Sunday, again, Rishon, like you said, is a very weak team this year, and I really feel bad for Guy Gudas that this team is just non-existent in the league.
Of course, we're on here with Dov Halachman, sports rabbi, talking Israeli basketball, whole land hoops. Let's go to a game that we were both at on Saturday night. Because of Hapoel Holon, they'll be playing in Cluj on Wednesday night, the same night Maccabi Tel Aviv will be playing Monaco. They fall to Hapoel Tel Aviv 67-62 in a, we'll say, a tough game. The first quarter, the first half was not very offensive. It was kind of offensive.
Tough game to watch, maybe.
Tough game to watch. But, you know, at the end of the day, Jacoby Brown hit those big shots near the end. 15 points for the former Jerusalem guard, 12 points James Young, 11 points Bartimore, 10 from Idan Zalmanson. Holon did not have a good game. They shot very poorly, 5 for 32 from 3, 16%. Michael Kaiser, 17. Chris Johnson, 10. Holon, you know, as much as Niamh Mizgav said, we focused totally on Hapoel Tel Aviv, I still don't believe him when I asked him that question in the press conference. They were thinking about this game against Cluj because they know it's going to be a tough game. They know it's going to be a battle. We saw them play Cluj already a couple weeks ago. They won by about 10 points. But it was a tough, tough game. Very physical. It was a battle down low at times. There was a lot of, you know, a lot of fouls, a lot of moving around, a lot of physicality in that game. And that's what Hapoel Tel Aviv did. And they raised their energy and Meviat Energiot, 55-28. They out rebounded Hapoel Holon in that game. And you can see who was looking to that game. And You could see from this game who wanted this win badly. Two little points that I want to take out of Paul Tel Aviv. It was kind of weird to see Raz Adam only play 3 minutes and Jonathan Schulderbrand only 2 minutes in that game. I don't know. I guess Franco just wanted to roll with the players that he felt he can get the most out of. But it was a big win for Paul Tel Aviv because they needed to pick up that second win, and they did.
Yeah, for sure. Hapoel Tel Aviv played pretty good basketball, even though it was a tough game to watch. They limited Holon, and I have to say Holon missed a lot of easy looks. And that really determined the game. And like you said, Holon was already looking forward, even though they didn't admit it. And that's the bottom line. And Franco has to win. He's in has-to-win coach mode right now, which means that if you don't win, you're gone. Yeah. And you just run with the players that you know you can win with. And even if you're like putting a player in like Zalmanson for like almost the whole game, you know that he's going to give you rebounding and size in the paint. And he's an Israeli, so he covers that spot with the rules. And that's it. And Bartimore is an experienced guard, and that's who he ran with, and that's who he trusts.
Look at their Israeli contingent. They have a pretty good Israeli contingent. I mean, you have some guys there that can play, which is important for Hapoel Tel Aviv. Danny Franco, yeah. There's been talk. There have been rumors that DeJuan Hernandez is going to be released. Josh Owens may be coming in and
play. Hernandez was awful.
Yeah, he was just not
terrible.
Good. Not a good player. It's interesting because Moshe and I got to speak to him on media day, and we didn't get the sense that he kind of really wanted to be here. Maybe we sensed wrong, but it was an interesting conversation, to say the least. Not exactly one of our better interviews that we've done, but it is what it is. Let's move on. Hapoel Jerusalem, they fall to Bnei Herzliya 85-79, game that Sports Rabbi and Mo Blue Line were at in Herzliya on Belgium Heritage Night. Yes, Andy Van Vliet and Retten Obasuan honored with the presence of the Belgian ambassador to Israel at the game. Mayor Fadlon was in attendance. It was a lot of fun, a lot of action in that game. Jerusalem did not come out well. Mene Herzliya did. They took the game right to Jerusalem. And after the game, we spoke to Quinton Hooker, and he said right away, so the game against Maccabi, you know, we did not come out of the aggressors, and today we made sure we were going to come out as the aggressors. And that's what they did. They put the pedal to the metal, and they played good basketball, and they won the game. You know, yeah, no question
really,
that
they did.
Yeah, no question that Bene Herzliya just played fantastic basketball over there. Chris Babb, who, you know, friend of the program, if you want to listen to a great podcast, they did one with him last month, a real, real one to listen to. 22 points in that game for Bene Herzliya. 16 points for Andy Van Vliet, who had two huge three-pointers in the fourth quarter that really sealed the deal when it was close, you know, because Jerusalem had tied up the game after the third quarter. But as Yotam Halpern said after the game, like, we lost the game in the first half. Like, we were just never there. Here, Kravitz, 10 points. Quinton Hooker with 15. Chiananu Onuwaku with 14 points in the game. It was, you know, they only played really with seven players. But Herzliya was able to outlast Bull Jerusalem. Jalen Adams, 17. Retino Basalon, 19 points. A dozen for Adam Ariel. Kaiser Gates with 11. Actually had a pretty good offensive game. Itai Segev with 10 points, but he misses so many easy shots. He had 10. He had 12 rebounds. He had a double-double. It is what it is. Amit Gershon, only 2 points in 14 minutes. Willie Workman, 2 points in 20 minutes. Anthony Bennett only played 12 minutes. Sean Kilpatrick only played 10 minutes.
How did he put Workman out there for the last possession?
Not sure.
What's his problem?
Well, I asked him why, you know, what the story was with Sean Kilpatrick. He said he just wasn't into the game and he decided to bench him. But, you know, Bennett only played 12 minutes. I don't know. I mean, listen, the Jerusalem are just, they're a train wreck. I mean, they're really a train wreck. You know, if you look at the teams, right, forget about Maccabi Rishon LeZion, it was a disaster. So I don't have to make changes. Bull Jerusalem, I mean, you know, I said to Moshe as we were driving home last night, is Sean Kilpatrick going to be on this team? Is this a player that are they going to try to move like Kilpatrick, even Bennett, Thon Maker? I mean, they'd love to move, right? And he's not even dressing for the games right now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Jalen Adams is going nowhere. Retino Basalon is going nowhere. Those two are locks. Kaiser Gates, it was good to see him play good offensively. The problem is defensively last night, he was a minus 18, worst on the team, plus minus. So, you know, you have over here a number of candidates that you could switch up. But again, there's, you know, monetary considerations. Jerusalem, not exactly one of the wealthier teams right now, even though their budget is pretty big. It's kind of interesting. I was listening to the press officer of Bene Herzliya talking to the Hooker family after the game. And he was explaining to them, like, he compared Hapoel Jerusalem to the Alba Berlin in Germany as being, you know, he said, you know, Bayern Munich is kind of the Maccabi and Alba Berlin is the Jerusalem. And Bene Herzliya beat them. And like, she understood, like, wow, that's a pretty big win. Well, yeah, it's a pretty big win for Herzliya, but Herzliya is pretty good. And listen to Oren Aharoni after the game. You know, he has high expectations for his team. I think he needs a little more depth. That's a little bit of a problem. Sean Dawson was hurt, but he hasn't been playing great this season. Sandy Cohen provides very little offensively. 16 minutes, no points. He only took one shot. Dori Sarra played 5 minutes. Just to get a little bit more out of those players. But it was a nice evening. It was good. Any thoughts on that game there, though?
Herzliya should have high expectations from themselves. They built a good team and they're playing well overall this season. And really, Jerusalem, I don't know what's going to be with them. They really haven't impressed me one bit this season, and they just don't look like a team at all. They just look like a bunch of players who are trying to run some plays. Some of them work better than others just because the player is a good individual player on his own. But as a team, they don't look like they're there at all.
Let's move on. The Derby of the Galilee. Yes, for the first time, and who knows, maybe this is the first time. Hapoel Gilboa Galil, 85-74 winners over Hapoel Galil Elyon. Game at Kfar Blum. Lendon Perantes put on a very, very nice show for Gilboa Galil and Guy Kaplan's team. 19 points, 8 assists leading the way over there. Yotam Anokhi, 14 points. Ronnie Harrell, 14 points. Sasha Killia-Jones with 13 points over at Galil Elyon. Listen, they had a nice game out of Bryce Washington, 15 points, 14 points, Siobhan Lewis, 11 points, Ike Yerabu, 13 points, Nimra Levy. Problem with Nimra Levy's 13 points, I think they all came in the first quarter of the game. They really needed a little bit more output from him. As we're speaking, you should know, I have the EuroLeague games on right now, but it's halftime. And what do I see? I see a special feature about the Galilee Derby. So there you go. The Galilee Derby there featuring it right now. They did a special feature. And the people in this little feature are visiting the grave of Haim Ohayon, who supported both teams financially over the course of the years. And of course, Hapoel Gilel Elyon, one of the great Israeli franchises, coming back into the top league this year. A lot of fun. I've been up there. A lot of fun. Good action. Good win for Gilboa Galil. They've had a nice season. They can actually have even a couple more wins, Dove.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with both of those teams actually this year. They're both beyond my expectations. And Gilboa Galil are in good form. They won their European game there on the road, which was very impressive. And Galil Elyon has been pretty balanced for a team who has come up from the second division this year.
One of the problems with Galil Elyon is that right now, Kyle Gibson, he's hurt. Doesn't look like they're going to replace him. And when you're only going to go into a game with three foreigners, you're kind of putting yourself at a disadvantage. So I don't know how long he's going to be out for. I guess they're looking just to survive through the break, and then maybe he comes back in December. But that's definitely something to look out for over there with Galil Elyon. Next up, Nes Ciona outlasts Hapoel Be'er Sheva 96-91. Overtime game. Be'er Sheva is winning this game by close to 20 points. Running away with it, I might add. I mean, it was like 66-49. Doing really, really, really good. Fabulous stuff from Hapoel Be'er Sheva. And then what happens in the last quarter? Nes Ciona outscores the Southern Reds 29-12 as Deontay Garrett and of course, Frank Bartley team up there with a ton of points, each with 20 and 23 points respectively. And they end up getting to overtime, and then they win in the overtime period. Tim Suarez, 12 points. Golan Group, 14 points. Ike Nwamu, 10 points. Derek Pardon, 17. And Amir Bell, 13. But Cody Demps with an amazing game, 31 points for Be'er Sheva. You know, Be'er Sheva's going to look at themselves and the standings. If they are like a game or two out of the playoff race at the end of the year, and they're going to say they're going to put their fingers right around this game and around the Rishon LeZion game, two games that they had to win, and they didn't.
Yeah, they really didn't. They really, really messed up that they didn't win this game. Like, they did everything right until the last quarter, and then they just fell apart, which is a real pity because Be'er Sheva have been finding ways to get buckets for themselves, no matter whether their shooting has been good or not from outside. But they really screwed up big time there at the end.
All right, finally, last but not least, we have Hapoel Haifa. Maccabi Rishon LeZion, 98-94 winners are the Carmel Reds in that game. Rishon LeZion, again, we mentioned earlier, not having a good season. Hapoel Haifa in control pretty much for this game. What could you say? 26 points Amit Simkon, 6-for-9 from three, was spectacular from deep. 14 points Scotty James, 13 points for Spencer Weiss and Kadeem Allen. Over on Rishon, 24 points Chris Clyburn, 24 points Natanael Artsy, who had a good game. 13 points Malik Dime, 13 points Tu Holloway. Not enough for Rishon LeZion. Guy Gudis is in deep trouble. National team coming up soon. Noam Dobrat only played 6 minutes, no points. Tal Pella, 9 minutes, 1 point. Gal Palatin, 8 minutes, 2 points. Igor Kolashov, 15 minutes, 2 points. Oi is right. I'll say this. If Hapoel Haifa loses that game, the Elat Hussein's probably on the unemployment line. I mean,
for sure.
You know, that Elat Hussein had to win that game by hook or by crook.
They barely did.
But it wasn't as close as it looked. They came back near the end there, but Elat Hussein had to win that game, or else he would have been looking for a new job, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Any final thoughts on those two games? Guy Gudas, I mean, he keeps making changes. I don't know if they're making changes fast enough because, you know, this hole that they're digging themselves into is going to keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger, Dove.
100%. They're going down a league this year.
Whoa, is that a prediction?
Yes.
They're not, listen, they're 1-5, right? We'll go through the standings here. They're 1-5. Paul Tel Aviv, Paul Haifa, Paul Eilat are all 2-4. Gilboa, Gomez,
I know, but
Messiano,
the material of players.
And then you have five teams that are 4-2. Hapoel, Jerusalem, Maccabi, Hapoel, Holon, Ben Herzliya, and Galil Elyon. Yeah, the playlist, and Two Holloway is a good addition. They got to still make some moves. There was talk that Chris Clyburn was going to be on his way out. They're in trouble.
I'm not convinced that they have what it takes to overcome their situation right now.
You know, we saw last year, right about this time, Nessiona was also probably in the same situation where they were like 1-4, 1-5, right? And you got to figure that they made the changes at the right time. They brought in the right players. They were able to take the FIBA Europe Cup championship, which was great. They didn't make the Israeli League playoffs, and some of those losses near the beginning of the year cost them at the end of the day. They just really, really cost them at the end of the day, though. And I think that we may see this over here. Now, I'm not so fast to say that they're going to go down regional Etzion. I'm not so quick, but boy, Yitzhak Perry's got to start spending a little bit of money and bringing some players in, or else there's going to be some serious trouble over there.
100%. Every word.
Coming up this weekend, before we get to national team action, Hapoel Eilat hosts Hapoel Tel Aviv, Be'er Sheva. Welcome, Galil Elyon. Jerusalem play Hapoel Haifa all on Saturday night. Sunday, Gilboa Galil Nes Ziona, Hapoel Holon Herzliya, and Rishon LeZion Maccabi Tel Aviv. What game are you looking at from this bunch of six?
I'm actually looking at Maccabi Tel Aviv because they might be coming off a loss on Friday night. And Rishon really got to find a way to do something in this league. And even though it's the two sides of the table, I'd like to see how Rishon show up against Maccabi and how Maccabi will look as well, and try to assess what both of these teams are heading to moving forward.
I'm going to take Hapoel Holon Bnei Herzliya. I think it's going to be a good game. Holon's going to be coming off of a trip abroad and a tough game in Cluj. And they're going to have to play Bnei Herzliya, who's basically sitting at home right now, just practicing and getting ready for that game. And they can lay it all out on the line, Herzliya, because both, they're taking a break right now. They're going to come in fresh, and then there's the national team. So if they want to go with a 7-man rotation in that game, they can easily go with 7 men. I think that's very intriguing. Not to say anything about the Maccabi game, I think that's an important game too. But I find that to be a very, very intriguing game. Looking forward to that game on Sunday night. Dove Halleckman, we have a question from a listener. Yes, Ben Pask sends us in a question. Your favorite basketball book, Dove Halleckman? I know you're a big
favorite
reader.
Favorite basketball book? I actually really liked one that had to do with photography, which was Kobe's book that he put out with Andrew B. Bernstein. Mm-hmm. Really worthwhile to pick up if you can. It tells Kobe's career through photos, which is a thing that I have a lot of passion for, obviously, as the photographer of the website. And that's what I recommend readers today to pick up.
Well, I think it's a great book. I do believe that Ben mentioned to me that he already owns that book. Is there another book that you could recommend? And I'll give it my recommendation also as well. So I'll give it mine while you think of a second book.
Okay.
I had mentioned to him also that Hamo Adon in Hebrew was a great book, and it really gives you the background about Maccabi Tel Aviv, written by Ohad Greenwald, a writer that was basically banned from Yad Aliyah, who was writing for Wallace, now a lawyer. I know Ben said he had picked it up. He started it, and I said, Ben, you've got to really read the whole thing. If you want to really understand the history of Israeli basketball, Maccabi Tel Aviv, that is the book to read. I also enjoyed, in Hebrew, I enjoyed Mickey Berkovich's autobiography. That was something very interesting to me. Mm-hmm. In Hebrew. In English, there's a lot of good books out there. I mean,
from, I thought of one.
From Magic to Larry Bird, which was always a great book. I enjoyed very much. And I have a number of other books. If it's the Trailblazers book from when they won their championship late in the 70s. It's also a pretty good book.
Why go to the NBA when you can talk about things that happen here with an English book called Alley-Oop to Aliyah?
Ah, Alley-Oop to Aliyah. So tell us about that book, Dove. It's a great choice.
It's a great book. I read it about 3 years ago. Great book. It's about a foreign players who create some connection with the land of Israel and the country of Israel through playing here. And they each have their different stories, for better or for worse, about playing in Israel. And it's just really fascinating and gives you a very, very unique perspective that we usually don't get on a daily basis.
Yeah, that's a great idea. David Goldstein, of course, a friend of the program here. Alley-Oop to Aliyah, I was with the author, helped him on a couple of occasions with the book at various events. And, you know, that is a great choice, actually. Excellent book, talks a lot about players that have made Israel their home or have gone back to the United States and, you know, are representatives of Israel, if it's the likes of Anthony Parker, so forth and so on, who starred in the NBA. But a great choice of a book, Dove Halachman. Where can people reach out to you, Dove?
At Dovester9.
At Dovester9. Of course, me, at The Sports Rabbi, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, sportsrabbi.com, for the latest and greatest news in Israeli sports in both English and Hebrew. Make sure you subscribe, leave us a 5-star rating, all the places where you can find podcasts. Do that, and just make sure you have that love for hoops passion here in the Holy Land. Dove Halachman, looking forward to speaking to you next week. We'll be wrapping up the game day that's going to be this coming weekend and looking forward to the national team. By then, we'll know who the players will be in the squad. It's going to be an exciting time. Looking forward to that with you, Dove. And we'll speak to you very soon.
You're listening to The Sports Rabbi.
All right, we're back here with The Sports Rabbi, Josh Halachman. Welcome aboard, of course, to The Sports Rabbi Show, where we bring you the best of Israeli sports all the way around the Holy Land. And, of course, now we are on to Football Israel, our soccer portion of The Sports Rabbi Show, where we'll be wrapping up the Israel national team World Cup qualifying campaign, where they finished off in third place in Group F, an admirable finish ahead of Austria, but behind, of course, Scotland, who notched the playoff spot, and Denmark, who was just, you know, above all else in this group. A lot of mixed feelings about how Israel performed. And, of course, to talk about Israel's end to this campaign and where they're going to go from here and what's going to happen on the field, off the field, in the coaching box and all that. Of course, we have on Roei Shalom. Roei Shalom, we've been following this all the way through. What is your initial reaction to the end of the campaign?
First of all, you know, we won the last game at home. It was ugly.
It was ugly. It was a 3-2 victory over Faroe Islands. Friday night, Israel lost to Austria 4-2.
Yeah, so I expected Israel to lose to Austria, and I hit that one. I'm not really proud of it, of hitting that game, but yeah, I expected it, and, you know, at least we finished third place.
Barely.
It doesn't matter. In the end of the day, when you'll look back a couple of years from now, you'll say, this was a crucial campaign, and that's how I see it. You know, before the campaign,
such an optimist. Yeah. My goodness.
You know, it was clear that we need to finish third. Now, I didn't think we're going to finish in front of Austria. I thought it's going to be, you know,
Israel battling it with Scotland. Denmark.
Exactly. And Scotland was the big surprise in this group, and they had an incredible campaign. Really, mm-hmm. We should know that out for them. But, you know, we had a good campaign. We didn't lose points against any of the Faroe Islands and Moldova and all of those teams. So that's, first of all, a plus. And not only that, you got points out of Scotland, and you got points out of Austria, and you finished third in this group. That should be key for years to come. And the biggest thing for me is we're ranked in the 80s in the FIFA rankings. I know these FIFA rankings are they are imperfect, but you know, Austria was in the, I think, 32 now this October when the last rankings were out. So, you know, we're in the 80s, Austria's in the 32, and we're close to them, and we even finished higher than them. You know, that's what we hope for, and it happened. So I see that as a big, 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 big plus.
So let me ask you this. Who's in the playoffs, Israel or Austria?
Yeah, of course. You know, of course, in the end of the day, Austria with the Nations League, they're still in the mix.
Mm-hmm. They are. They're definitely in the mix.
Yeah, they are in the mix. And again, there's also Scotland that they're in the playoffs and Denmark are in. So, yes, Israel is looking from the outside. But
as usual.
As usual. But you know, this was our best offensive campaign.
Yeah, great.
We've had six. Yeah, no.
How well did we do defensively?
Yeah, so defensively,
we goals.
There.
Oh my goodness! Oh my goodness gracious!
But we did enjoy good soccer, and that's not, you know, a couple of years ago we lost the games, and it was really bad soccer. So I'll take that as a plus. I'll take it that, you know, I sent you a message yesterday after the game of first half statistics and second half statistics.
Yes.
If we would have played only 45 minutes, we had 22 points. with the plus five in the goals. So, unfortunately, soccer is played 90 minutes and not 45 plus.
90 plus minutes. 90 plus.
And especially with the Israeli soccer, we usually like to play even 100 minutes in total. So, we did play well in the first half. Second half, we fell off. And that is something we need to look forward to because it means a lot about the Israeli soccer and the Israeli player. That is the most important thing because most of the players were playing abroad. They're coming from abroad. Most of them aren't even playing in their teams. Or let's take Ador Peretz as the perfect example. Even though he had a great week for him with two goals, one against Faroe Island and one against Austria. But you saw that by the 60th minute against Scotland, against Austria, even against the Faroe Islands, he was tired. And Dor Peretz is known for his aggressiveness and you know, being in that type of talent on the European side. But, you know, he's not playing in Venice right now.
No.
In the Serie A. So you see it on him and it's crucial. Now, it's not only him. It's different players across their teams, if it's on the offensive side as well. You know, Bibras Nathrop gave 60 minutes. And the drop-off from the bench, the starting 11 to the bench, is big. And you know, people are looking at why didn't Willy Rothensteiner make those changes? And that might be one of the reasons why, is he rather have someone tired than a player that is playing in the Israeli league. And that is a problem. And that is, I don't know if it's true or not. You know, if you rather have, for example, Mohamed Abu Fani or this time Aviv Avraham or whatever it is from the second, you're pretty much your second unit over Dor Peretz that is tired.
Aviv Avraham, oh boy. He was basically parachuted into the last minute. I've been very quiet here, haven't I? I haven't. I've been very quiet. And just let me know when I can chime in on what I think about this.
I think it's your time because, you know, I want to hear what you have to say about not only this campaign, but looking forward at where this national team is at right now.
All right. Let's say this. They finished in third place, which was the goal, and they accomplished that goal. They lost. They won five games. They only drew one, and they lost four. You have to draw a few more games than the four losses, and that was obviously an issue. I'm not saying that even a draw would have helped them against Scotland. Wouldn't have helped them against Scotland. I mean, Scotland was just really good. I mean, they went 7-2-1. They only had one loss. So Israel was in a bad spot to begin with. Scotland is basically playing the best soccer maybe of their nation's history, or recent history at least. And for Israel to go up against that was very difficult. I think that it's like the Israel national team. I had these thoughts. It's basically the Eran Zahavi Israel national team. That he, you know, he basically controls the team. I think there's a lot of question marks that have to be out there. He controls the team on the pitch. I believe he controls the team off the pitch, for better or for worse. And I think that is kind of an issue. Willy Rutensteiner is not a soccer coach. That is clear. He is a technical director. He is somebody that understands what it's supposed to be to put together a national team, and that's where he should have been, not on the sidelines. We accepted him being on the sidelines because Eran Zahavi wanted him. Now, I want to talk about Eran Zahavi a little bit here. We have to remember, why do I say it was Eran Zahavi's team? It's because Willy Rutensteiner gave him a call way back when he was basically off the team after throwing the captain's armband, when Andy Herzog was the coach, and said, you know, Willie picked up a tone and said, Eran, you know, we want to have you come back. The minute that Willy Rutensteiner does that, he basically submits to an Eran Zahavi, which is fine. Eran Zahavi is by far the best player on the team. He scores the goals, and I understand that. But he also, for better or for worse, can control. I'm not saying he is. I'm not saying he did. But can control players called up and not called up. I think it is crazy to think that this team couldn't have used Lior Rafaelov over the past year. For Lior Rafaelov to be frozen out, to me, is just a real big shame. This is one of the top all-time Israeli players that have played abroad. I think that he could have done something in this campaign to have helped Israel in some of these games. Again, I'm not saying they would have qualified, and I'm not saying that he would have been around for the, you know, the next campaign after that. However, I think Lior Rafaelov being around the national team would have been a good thing. Why he was not there is still a very big mystery. Yes, we know the reason, according to Willy Rutensteiner, is that he didn't want to have him come there and not play him. Okay. Sean Weissman has proven in this campaign that he can score. Monis de Boer had an excellent campaign. The fans have to stop booing. I think that's enough with all that nonsense. But he also has to be above that and not start making gestures at the fans as well, and he has to be a little bit more intelligent next time when he ever decides to post anything on Instagram or social networks. So, and that played a factor in the team. It did not play a factor, obviously, on the pitch to some extent how the team played, but it definitely fractured a little bit of the fans' view of this national team. And on one hand, again, I think that we have to accept him. If he was called up, we have to respect that. On the other hand, I do understand the fans being upset. I still get that. He wrote some, you know, tough comments during a war, favoring the enemy, and that's not positive. That can never be positive. I would only wonder what would happen if he would have done that in a country like Iran, or another, you know, country of that ilk. What would have happened to him in that case? And I know I'm throwing out a lot of different things here, but on one hand, we saw movement towards the future. I think that, again, Willy Rutensteiner did a very good job of that, and I think he would have done even a better job had he stayed in his position. they should have brought in a head coach. How he had convinced the Israel Football Association to allow him to end up being the head coach is beyond me. The Israel Football Association has to do, as they say, a bedek bayit. I think they have to sit down and really take a good look at what's going on, because they were on the right track. They understood that they had to bring in somebody like Willie Rutensteiner, who should have been in charge of all of the national team programs, not just the senior team, which is what ended up happening. And I think that was a real shame. And that, I think, put us back a number of years, which anyway you slice it. Yes, the under-21s are playing extremely well right now. They won another game against Hungary today, 3-0. They've been playing great football, but it's not just the under-21s. The under-18s have not looked good. They fell today to the Netherlands, a team that only brought 11 players to play against Israel. They lost 4-1. Again, that's Holland. I mean, that's good team. I'm not saying they're not. But there was a plan that was supposed to be put in place. Where is that plan? It's like we start a plan here in Israel, and we never get past the second page, right, of a 40-page plan. It's always the same thing. It's like, oh, we try to cut corners. Oh, we want to be cheap. Oh, we want to save money. And you know what? There should have been no reason why they didn't bring in another coach after Andy Herzog. I'm sorry. That was a big mistake. And we saw that he made late substitutions constantly. The players loved playing for him. That we know. And they were going to, you know, and again, Iran Zahavi was a key player in that. And that's great. But that's not what his job was supposed to be. And I think that he just doesn't have the qualities to be a head coach. And he used the Israel national team to get his first coaching job. And I have a big problem with that. If you really look at it, that's an issue. You know, tonight at the under-18 game against the Netherlands, who was at the game? Patrick Van Leeuwen and Raymond Atfeld. I mean, like, it's funny. And you know what went through my mind, Roy Shalom? If you're still there, I didn't put you to sleep, right? You're still there.
I'm here.
You know what went through my mind? The national team is going to hire Raymond Atfeld to coach the team and Patrick Van Leeuwen to be the technical director. But you know what? I know, because anything can happen in this country. And you know what? The other thing is, Maccabi Tel Aviv still hasn't named the head coach. Is Willie Rutensteiner going to be named the next head coach of Maccabi Tel Aviv? I mean, like, it's not going to happen. But I mean, like, there were rumors floating around like that. I'm like, oh my goodness. Willie Rutensteiner is not a coach, okay? And everybody has to understand that. He's not a coach. He'll never be – I don't know if he'll never be a coach, but he's just not a coach. And at this level, they needed to have – Andy Herzog, I thought, was a good coach. I thought he did a good job. And I think they were on the right path. And I think it was a shame that he stepped out early. Now, he may have been forced out by Willie, because Willie wanted the job. Willie wanted to coach. And
Willie wanted this job the second he got to Israel. Yes. The second he got the job.
He looked at us and he said, friars. He said, suckers. I'm going to get to be the head coach finally of a country, because I'm going to use the Israel national team, the Israel Football Association. I'm going to sucker them into letting me be a head coach. And that's exactly what he did. And, you know, listen, you know, I just like, you know, fool me once, fool me twice. But I mean, come on. I mean, he's not a coach, and you know what? He never wavered from his three central defenders in the back. Excuse me, and that was a problem. It was clearly a problem. You gave up 21 freaking goals in this campaign. How do you give up? At least they finished above Austria. What happens? Let me ask you this: what are you thinking when Faroe Islands ties up the game 2-2? What are you thinking? What's going through your heads, Roy Shalom? I mean, you're thinking they're drawing with the Faroe Islands. Like, what are you doing? Also, the lineup that he put out there, he was making so many changes. You know what? He had to play his best players against Faroe Islands. Get the win properly. Don't play around. Make sure you finish in third place. So he did, okay? We all get that. But you know what? He had to sweat through, and everybody had to sweat through finishing in third place. They should have gone out there and pounded the Faroe Islands 6-0. I don't care what happens. You lost to Austria 4-2. You want to get your players ready to go, and you want to pound this team. You want to pound them, put them in oblivion, and prove that you're really a third-place team. And yes, I know what you're saying, that nobody's going to remember, blah, 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 blah. that it was on goal differential or this and that. The bottom line is they did not win convincingly against Faroe Islands, and that to me is a big problem. I don't care if it was the last game of the campaign. And you know what's going to be the worst thing coming up? And this is what really is going to tick me off. You know what's going to be the worst thing, Roy Shalom? You have no idea what I'm going to say right now, right? I have no idea right now.
I have no clue.
Okay, we're going to roll around to March, okay? Israel's not going to have a head coach still.
And they're going to say,
we don't need to play a couple of friendly games. Forget about that. You know, we want to make, everybody else wants to really watch anyways the playoffs or the World Cup. Nobody wants to watch Israel national team play. Why are we going to waste money on playing some friendly games at this point? We're too good for that. And that is going to be the wrong attitude. And you know that's exactly what's going to happen. As horrible as I feel about saying it, you know that's going to happen. Go pick a couple of teams to play against. Do it properly. Pick two decent teams, two world-class teams. Do me a favor. There are going to be good teams that are going to be sitting out, not playing. Play two friendlies. And make sure you have a head coach properly installed by then. Don't futz around. Don't play around. You want to prove that you've changed, you've done something different than the IFA? Do it. But you know what? I have absolutely zero confidence in it. That's the end of my rant.
Yeah, I agree. I get it. You know, the whole – I think Willie did some good stuff for Israel on the national – on
he
the
did.
National side of soccer
100%.
When he was the technical director. And we're seeing it already. We're seeing it a bit. Now, he did say yesterday, and I totally agree with him. This is he said 10 to 15 years that it's a process. You know, we've seen processes of – and you feel it already. You know, if this is the start of a 10 to 15 – your process, and we can really stick to the plan, even though we can't, because that's not our nature of Israelis.
Of course, we can never stick to the plan.
But,
why would we want to stick to the plan?
Of course, but if we can somehow stick to it and you know, have this, you know, keep it going, I truly believe that, you know, if it's not now, if it doesn't happen in the next couple of years, it is going to happen sooner rather than later. If we don't, why was this necessary? Why did we need to bring Rothensteiner to Israel? Why did we pay for a technical director for a couple of years? Why was this whole startup nation of the soccer plan even invented? And that's what I'm trying to look forward at. And what's the next step for the Israel national team? We know it's going to be Manuel Solomon. We know it's going to be Liel Abada. We know that it's going to be Supad Mirano that played yesterday. And he looked pretty good, and he looks physical. And, you know, he's getting some Serie A minutes, even more than Dor Perez, and he's only 18. You know, you see the talent. You see Daniel Peretz that, you know, he's not going to be in Israel for long.
No, he'll be off. He'll be out.
And you see that, and you're saying, okay, I can see the future here, and we're seeing the under-21s playing well. And I hope there's a reason for why they're playing well and not just, okay, this is pretty much just a good class of players and that's it. Because usually, and let's look back, in history, usually in the under-21s, we're pretty good. We were in a couple of years with the under-21 before, but, you know, the under-21s that came up never were able to make that step towards making a Euros with the national team. So I want to see this process. I want to see the next coach not being afraid of letting the kids play. You know, we saw a lot of kids play under Willie Rothensteiner. You know, we saw the El-Makayas, we saw the Abu Khanna. Maybe they didn't succeed. Maybe they, you know, but we saw these players and we saw them try to change something.
Yeah, 100%. And that is where he excels in that technical director.
And now the question is...
He couldn't manage the team on the pitch.
I agree. And now the question is, who's going to come in? if an Israeli coach, let's say Barak Bachar, comes in, do you see him playing a 21-year-old kid and bringing him to the national team? I don't see that. I don't see that because he'll have the pressure of the Israel media, because he knows that if he gets fired, his career is pretty much doomed, in other words, because we've seen what happened to
National team, and the national team is a graveyard for coaches. Everybody knows that. You know?
And I hope he doesn't go to the national team.
We all know that. Now, the national team needs to have a technical director making those decisions. That's what they need. They need a technical director.
Do you think it should be an Israeli?
Should it be
Yossi Ben-Ayon?
Who, the technical director or the head coach?
Yes.
The technical director?
I don't have an issue.
But if it's Yossi Ben-Ayon, I don't have an issue. I mean, he has enough football knowledge that I'll, you know, that he'll forget it, more football knowledge that I'll never know in about 10%, you know, come on.
Well, would you want to see Avram Grant that is helping out every Arab country?
Yes.
The Emirates and all come back.
Yeah, I'd be happy to see Avram Grant come back. I have no issue with that either. I have no issue with it. I know a lot of people don't like him. You know, I should mention a little time out for a second. Do you know where Avram Grant is tonight? Do you know where he is tonight?
I don't.
You don't. You see, you should be reading my tweets a little bit more often. That's why. Then you'd know exactly where he is. I'll tell you where he is. He flew today for the evening to Poland to be part of an event that was honoring the righteous among the nations, who are non-Jews that risked their lives saving Jews during the Holocaust. He went to an event in Poland. And how do I even know that? It wasn't publicized anywhere. How do we know that? The great author, Guillem Balag, and if I pronounce his name correctly or not, he's a Spanish writer. He's written books on Leo Messi, Ronaldo. He has a book on Maradona coming out in January. He happened to have been on the same flight to Poland, and he wasn't planning on going to this event. But he bumped into Avram Grant on the flight, and he asked where he was going. He was going there to preview his book and work on his book sales, and he was doing interviews and promotions. And then what happened was, bumped into Avram Grant, and Avram Grant basically told him where he was going to be, and he decided that, wow, you know what, I'm going to go to this program tonight. So,
yes.
You know, that's really incredible, okay? This is Avram Grant. You know, people could sit there and say this and say that. This is Avram Grant. That's what he did this evening. That's what he did. He went. He flew to Poland for a special event.
So I want to see now. I'll take this another step. Who should coach this national team, and who, what Israel needs going forward, and I see it as something very clear. We need someone that has been under a national team, that has been a national team coach before. Someone that maybe even had a success as a national team coach. You know, I don't want to see a coach that has never been in this role before, because it's a tough role. It's different from coaching a team. It's just different. It has a different vibe to it. You need to know how to take the players in less than a week, implement everything you want, and make it like perfect for the situation. And get the best out of the players. And it's just so hard to see these days. And even, you know, we saw Portugal and Italy that mm-hmm. couldn't even come through and get that done. And Italy's, you know, the European champions. And Portugal just a couple of years ago were as well. So, it just says so much about national teams and how hard it is to succeed there, but that's our chance to get there somewhere. And I think that a coach that has a track record of national teams is what Israel needs. We haven't had that pretty much for years now. And I truly believe that that's what Israel needs. I just don't think it's going to happen. Because of salary wise, you know, a lot of things just fall because of money here in Israel. And we rather try to do the cheaper, and we always fall You know, yes. We always fall because of the cheaper. Let's try to bring a technical director, pay him a lot of money, and don't pay the coach a lot of money. You know, we had that with Herzog at first. Then, you know, we don't have money to bring a coach now, and we have Willy Rothschild, and, you know, what will we do with him? Okay, let's just give him the coaching job and not always, worry about his
as
salary.
As I say, we always do things half-assed, not full-assed.
Exactly. Half-assed. Exactly. And this national team, this group is just too talented. You know, you're going to have Manuel Solomon, then hopefully he'll, you know, make this extra step and, you know, leave Shakhtar Donetsk and go to a bigger club, bigger, you know, league. You're seeing, you know, we had two, I think it was the first time ever, we had two players from the Serie A playing on the national team together, you know, with Dor Perez and Souf. We had Eran Zahavi and Eli Dassa playing in the Dutch league and Ofir Marciano. Three players playing in the Dutch league.
Well,
Ofir Marciano, yeah.
On the roster or playing? That's also another. Hold it. That's another issue that we didn't really get into over here, and I let you ride with the Dor Perez thing. If you don't play for your national team, you shouldn't be playing. Excuse me. If you don't play for your club team, you shouldn't be playing for your national team. That should be the rule of thumb. Now, the answer will be we can't afford that. We need players that are, you know, playing. And I don't buy that. We need players that have the best experience. I really don't buy that. I think you need players that, you know, are playing on a regular basis. And that means if you need to have a player that's playing in a different league, be it the Israeli league or others, you know, and Dor Perez isn't playing on a regular basis. Now, Ofir Marciano was great. Okay. He had a great campaign. He had a great campaign. He proved himself. And this is the first time he had the full campaign for himself. He did a great job. Think about how much better he would have been. And he was good, even though he gave up 21 goals. Think about how much better he would have been had he been playing full time.
Of course. You know, no doubt. But that's not the case. Now, so let's put it like this. Would you rather see Itamar Nitzan in goal than Ofir Marciano?
No. Okay. You took the words out of my mouth. I was going to say that there's no way I'd want to see Itamar Nitzan and go. I hear you. I hear you. We're in a spot. Israel's in a spot where we're still not producing enough good players. Now, and I'll tell you this. The issue with Marciano is he's not young. So they have no incentive to play him. They're playing, and he's playing, not going to play ahead of the Dutch national team goalkeeper that's playing for PSV unless he gets hurt. And that's the same with Dor Perez. Honestly, Dor Perez went out to Europe way too late. He needed to go to Europe four years ago.
True. He knows that. Everyone knows that.
When Slavisa Jokanovic was coaching Maccabi Tel Aviv, he knew right away, and he said it in many press conferences, that Dor Perez was a special player. And this is a guy that could go out to Europe now. And he should have gone out to Europe now. And if he would have gone out to Europe 4 years ago, he'd be playing and starting for a major team in one of the top leagues. He would be. But he didn't. He went out too late. He went out too late. And that's what happened here. I mean, even Eran Zahavi, when he went out to Palermo, it was late already. I know, it sounds odd, but like you're 23, 24, it's late.
Right, and that's what we've seen with Willy Rothschild. And this is Willy's philosophy, and you should see it, and we should note it as well. He's trying to push. He was trying as the technical director, even as the national team coach, he was trying to push every single player from Israel to leave Israel and go play abroad.
Yeah, and I'm not taking any, you know, my criticism of Willy Rutensteiner is really as his coaching level. And the fact
as a coach,
and the fact that he kind of suckered Israel into letting him coach the team. As a technical director in his vision, he's the right man. He should be the technical director. I would sign him up for 10 years, okay? I would sign him up. You know what? Willy, we want you to go back upstairs. Here's a 10-year contract. Do what you have to do. Here's the money. Bring in the right coach. Bring in the coach that you see is the potential future and fix the freaking defense because the defense sucks. Okay. Somehow they have and you know what? If they have to move to a 4-4-2 at some point, I mean, like they've got to do something there. I don't, you know, they got to be a little bit more creative. He didn't have answers. And Herzog went crazy after press conferences. He didn't have answers. I hear all that, you know,
No, the guy, he didn't have answers. He didn't have answers for it. And, you know, I can understand him because I'm sure that every single time before the game, before the campaign, he was like, how am I going to get this defense right? Okay, I have it now. I have a feeling. Maybe now. And he just, every time he was like, oh, nope. And every time at halftime, I'm sure he was like, okay, we got it. We got it on defense. That's it. We're going to do it. We're going to do it. And then the second half came. And that is something we'll need to see. Now, I want to say this. There's a new regime in the Israel Soccer Association. There's Boni Ginzburg and Moshe Sinai. And Tal Ben-Chaim now is in, and he's supposed to help as a defensive coach. You know, he's just starting this job, so maybe this is something that will take him time. But we are seeing, like, this new regime in, and hopefully – you know, maybe we don't need Willy Rothensteiner because there's now five people doing pretty much his job. So I hope that is something we can push off of and not have this va'ada, this group coming in every 2 years and picking a new coach and going through, you know, we're seeing it every time that the special group of Dudu Awat and Eli Gutman and Itzik Ben Melech and all of those coming together. And you know, it feels like the American Idol of like finding the new talent. This is what we're like doing every time with a coach, and we're always falling for it, like always. So maybe now, maybe like we're not going to go through that. Maybe we'll let the people from inside pick the coach and you know, give him a leash as well. We haven't seen a coach stay more than a campaign. Do you remember the last coach that has stayed more than one campaign?
I think it may have been, well, hold it. You're talking about campaign as in World Cup and Euro, right?
Yes.
The last coach, didn't Alicia do too? Did he
not? Maybe Alicia did. I'm not sure about Alicia, but that's the whole point of it. Alicia has been in 2014, I want to say 16, 14. It's been over three campaigns, and I get it. Herzog was shaky. Herzog, you know, it was a start and he was a new coach and we're just, we like to criticize the national team and that's a problem here in Israel. We want to see immediate,
I would have liked to have seen Andy Herzog run through the contract, you know, let him stay on for the, I think that it was frustrating for him, but I think it was also, there was the pressure from above. There were issues.
Right.
You know, right. I don't know. What can I say?
I just hope that, as you said, we're not going to see a coach like we won't. I hope we see an early hire. You know, I won't be surprised if someone like a Buxi somehow comes back into the mix.
Goodness.
With him being now with Neyuda and it's not working and everything. And I wouldn't be happy with. But I can see him coming back. I don't know if they'll be able to bring someone from abroad. Who would it be? Like, who would want to come to this national team and be the coach? I don't know. But we've seen the names that have come up the past couple of years, and it's not great names. Like, it's not like someone that you would say, "Wow, I want this guy." As the national team head coach.
The last one, I just looked at, it's Eli Gutman. He was 2014 World Cup and 2016 mm-hmm. Euros. Elisha was only one campaign. Before that was Luis Fernandez won, Dorkashtin had two, Avram Grant had two, Nielsen won, Shlomo Sharp 1, 2, 3, 4. He had four campaigns in a row. So the last one was Eli Gutman. Yeah, listen, it is what it. I don't know. I just see the Israel Football Association has to get their act together. I mean, I think it would just be really sad if they can't continue. I criticized. I was very critical here on this program about what went on, and I think a lot of it's directed by Aaron Zahavi. And that, again, that's not to take away the player that he is. You know, he's a spectacular player. But I think he was allowed, and I think that was the payment of getting him back on the team. And they needed him, right? Because we scored 23 goals. How many of those were his? About half of them. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, there's, you know, you have to take the good with the bad and the bad with the good. And that's what it is when it comes down to the national team. But I'll tell you, boy, if they don't play two friendlies in March, then it'll just throw it out the window. I mean, you might as well just chuck it out the window here at the Israel national team. And that would just show me the lack of seriousness. Listen, Greece, play against Greece, play against Cyprus. You don't want to have big flights. Those are too short flights. Play those two teams. You know, those are close. Couldn't be any reason why they can't play those two teams. They're not.
And we are going to have,
I think that's not going to be for a while.
So I want to see something new. I want to see, you know, the offense keep cooking, you know, defense, you know, maybe bring the under 21 kids and say, I'd rather them allow the 21 goals over, you know, what we had right now.
Yeah, like Bieber's not We saw Behram Kael retired officially from the national team also today. He hadn't played for a while anyways. I think he made maybe one appearance in this session. But that's about it. I mean, listen, I think Bieber Snotko has to hang it up. I think that's it's time for some of the players, the Eitan Tibis and Oral Deganis, some of the defenders that have been poor. You know, Hatem Al-Hamid has not been good. They just got to try to, you know, try to figure out if they have to bring in young players, bring those young players in. You know, listen, Bar Arad had two goals today for the under 21s. They got to do something. You got to mix it up. And I think if you don't continue what was started here, it's like, you know, typical. We've made a plan. We spent all kinds of money on the plan, and then we just threw it in the garbage. You know, we put it into the circular file and said goodbye.
I think I'll say this, Oren Chason, I trust him to continue the plan. Or, you know, now Bonny Ginsberg is there and Moshe Sina is there. I hope they saw the plan, they understand the plan, and they like the plan, and they'll implement it and continue with it. You know, Alon Chazan right now is the under 21 head coach, and he's been through the system, and he's one of the guys there that, you know, he was fully into Herzog's and Rudy Rotenstein's plan. You know, he said that he's not qualified to be the head coach of Israel, and I think he's not there yet. He is going through, but he's someone that is learning the system of being only under national teams.
Yeah,
and he the guy one day, but
he's not. Like, but listen, he's not that, young at this point. I like Alon Chazan. I think he's good. You know what? If you're going to tell me we can't play two games in March because we don't have a head coach, just put him as in the head coach. You know. Just let him be the interim head coach for a couple of years.
Oh, he's done it already.
I know he's done it already. No, but I don't want to hear an excuse. I don't want to hear an excuse that, oh, we can't do it because, you know, I don't want to hear that. No, thanks. Roei Shalom, where can people reach out to you? Where can people find you?
So you can reach out at R. Shalom on Twitter. You know, we can continue the conversation there. You know, if you have someone for the head coaching job of the national team and you think he's qualified, you know, send us a message with that name. We'll push it forward. We'll be the ones pushing that name going forward. You know, but it has to be someone that we don't need to pay him too much. I'm just giving you the job description, right? Not paying too much.
No, you know, car likes his benefits. No car, no fringe benefits.
Yeah, we also sometimes pay per hour, and not pay for the whole duration. You know,
we won't pay for gas.
And no flights. You know,
your flights. You have to. Your flights have to be three connections, one through Istanbul, to make sure you get arrested while you're on your way there.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, Roei Shalom. Of course, you can find me at the Sports Rabbi Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, sportsrabbi.com. This was an entertaining show, an entertaining conversation. Hope you enjoyed Natan Levy, Dov Halakwood, and of course, Roei Shalom. We'll speak to you on later in the week, Roei Shalom. Thanks for coming on board today.
Of course. El Israel.